Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2772. It's 2772. My name is Carol Levine. And I'm Vice President of NASCA. And on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, we have the Survivor Professionals come on. It's open mic night. You know, you come on, you can just simply call in. And if you have questions, Sharon Higdon Jones is here. And she is one of my very, very favorites because she is just so smart. Yes, she is. Anyway, the telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if you have any questions about what we're going to be discussing tonight, okay, you can call in, or you can call in about anything that you might have on your mind that's bothering you. I'll tell you a little something about her. She is a licensed psychotherapist, and that's for over 35 years. And she works with individuals and couples and families and who have experienced the trauma of abuse. And in her words, the pain of being sexually abused is deep and profound. And yes, it is. Yes, it is. The abuse experience touches the core of a woman's being in ways she could never have predicted. She has been violated. Is that right? Violated on so many levels. Yes, okay. Sharon is also the author of the book called Healing Steps. And with the, she has a workbook, too, and I really like that because, you know, in the AM, of course, people end up calling me a lot of times, but they can also open up those books. Because the workbook is something that someone can turn to and maybe find out answers right there. So she also has a workbook. And I think that's wonderful. We'll talk about that in a little while. But anyway, let me get myself a little more comfy here. And I'll read the mission statement, and then we'll get to Sharon, okay? We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone, and it does. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That is just such a tiny bit of what NASCA does. We also ask that people look at our website. I was talking to someone just earlier, and I'm hoping that he'll come on the show. But anyway, the point is, look at the website, okay? It's www.nasca, it's NASCA, NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. And just to explain a little bit about it, with this website, I have gotten much information. We all can. Anyone who looks at it, if you open up the links, just scroll down a little bit. You'll see red lines, and right below that, you see, like, on the left-hand side are programs. Those are programs we can send people to. If they need to go into a program type of atmosphere, they want to, you know, mingle with other people, you know, that have problems and issues. You would be surprised how many programs there are out there. And a lot of times it's right in your area. There is no sign outside that says, welcome, come speak about child abuse and the effects of, okay? They don't advertise that. So, but if you use the programs over there, say you live in New York, okay? You go to New York. Everything is alphabetical. And you go to New York, in New York City, and everything is alphabetical. You'll find your area, and you would be shocked at how many programs there are, actually, for those of us who have gone through so much abuse. Sometimes the therapist's there, sometimes there's not. But the point is, many times, there are people, they mingle with each other, and that's helpful, too. So these programs, I've always gotten very positive feedback on them. So, all right, so that's on the left-hand side. And then all the way over to the right-hand side, you'll find other types of things you can open up. And I think it's the second one in from the right is about prevention, intervention, and recovery. This is for children, prevention, okay, very, very important. What can we do as a society to help our children stay safer? What can we do as parents to help our children stay safer? What can we do as a community to help our children stay safer? As Bill always says, children, you know, they're very important people. They're the future. That's what they are. And, you know, we have to do a better job with what we're doing today. What are we showing them today? Okay. Boy, I wouldn't want to be inside of their heads right now. But anyway, the point is this. Sharon, you are here. Yes, you are. And, I'm glad you're here. I'm always happy when you're on the show. And And is there something you want to talk about? Is there something that you have on your mind? And then we could go into something else that I have prepared, but it doesn't matter either way.
Okay. Hi, Carol. It's good to talk to you. And I know you're one of my very, very favorite people, too. And have such wonderful words of wisdom, and I applaud your commitment. I applaud your commitment. And I did want to comment on one thing you just said when you were talking about people would be shocked to see how much help there is available. And I have to tell you, I've been licensed now for over 40 years. Time does march on. And I have to say, that wasn't always true. And so even though so many of us can get discouraged about what's going on, it's also so encouraging to know that so many people are speaking up, so many people are reaching out, so many people are assisting. And, you know, you're so right. As long as there's help available, professional help, obviously, I feel very strongly that that's very important. But there are so many, there's nothing more professional than somebody who's had the same experience or similar experience of abuse as we all have, right? Because it's a club that none of us want to belong to, but we belong to it. And yeah, and we know. And there's something about having somebody just nod their head because they can acknowledge that they know what you're talking about. They know that this is an event or events that happened and went away, but this is something that is, it's ongoing in our lives. It's not something that disappears, which actually brings up something that I was thinking about earlier today, because I was talking to a client a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about her life decisions. And most of them not very good early on. And she said, do you think that the fact that I was abused had something to do with the decisions I've made in my life? And I said, what do you think? And she said, I'm beginning to wonder. And you know, that's a topic that we don't talk about that much, because we talk certainly a lot about our PTSD, what happened to us. But as we grow up and as we make decisions, because most of us have had somewhat colorful lives, right? Post abuse.
They're very colorful.
Yes.
Oh, God.
They have not been boring. And that didn't just happen. You know what I'm talking about.
I hear you.
So are you saying that your life might have been a little colorful? Because
oh, mine was very colorful, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's an interesting topic to talk about, you know, how do you think your life decisions were affected? How do you think your relationships were affected, the choices that you made, or were they?
Oh, Lord Jesus.
No,
hold on. I'm going to make the phone louder. Hold on. Yeah, this is a good topic because, you know, what's going on, people don't realize it. Of course, they don't realize it at the time, Sharon, you know this. But what we go through, okay, helps form who we become, you know. And it's very hard for people to realize, you know, we end up having all different kinds of problems in our life. And it's because of what the past, you know, showed us. And what we learned as children, what we saw as children, what we went through and experienced, you know, all the physical, the sexual, the emotional abuse and neglect. Whatever, you know, some have all, you know, and or went through all and are still standing, as I like to say, still standing.
Yes.
And, you know, so, you know, but in the meantime, before we get to a certain point in our healing journey, people are just miserable. And with relationships, we choose poorly. Oh my word! Okay, maybe I'm too fussy too. The guy has to have hair on his head. Yes, he does. Okay, I you
is
know
that it?
This is well. Now watch yourself there. Well, you know, and I like a guy that isn't skinny. I like a guy that's a little husky. You know. I'm not a bruiser, don't get me wrong, but he has to have a good personality. He's got to be funny like we are. Okay, we're funny, you know, okay, he has to understand, you know, us too, and we have to understand him as well. Many times we're magnets towards each other. Maybe our problems are not the same, but, and then, you know, the couple has to work out that's dysfunctional in their relationship. You know, otherwise it just turns into forget about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of things. Yeah.
Well, there is. I think there are, we have certain expectations, you know, like the one she just mentioned, but we have certain expectations in the relationship. We all do, right? We have certain desires. But I think those are also influenced by what happened to us or what didn't happen to us.
Right.
You know, my mother used to always say, and she would tell this to everybody and never really, bless her heart, never really stopped and listened to her own words. But she said, you know, Sharon, every birthday and every Christmas, she always asks for one thing. She always asks for a normal family. Don't you think that's odd? And she would just laugh and sip her tea, like thinking that might be an interesting thing to look at. Why is she always saying she wants a normal family, right? But
right.
I think we come in with expectations in our relationships. We come into expectations what we think that we deserve in life. You know, we bring our own self-definitions into our adult life, into our relationships, and heaven knows those are usually pretty warped, right?
Right,
because of what occurred with us. So you know, it's a very meaty topic to look at our own lives and our own abuse and say, how did that affect what happened to us later on in our 20s and our 30s and beyond? How did that color it? How did it form it, or did it?
Yeah.
Okay. And, well, what do you think about that, Deborah? Go ahead. I know she wants
to talk.
Well, I was just
going to interject. one thing that I wanted to add to that is, you know, being a survivor, you as you start learning the things, like you're saying, did that affect my relationship? How did that affect my decision? And then you try figuring it out, and you get there, and you're like, I got it figured out. And then it's like an onion. You start uncovering other layers that you're like, oh, so it went much deeper than that. So it's a constant healing process. And it's always, you're just discovering new things all the time.
Yes, mm-hmm. Hopefully you are. Hopefully,
yeah.
Because I think you're so right, and I think anybody who's on a healing journey, it is like it unfolds, and we learn something, and we go a little deeper. Except some of us don't do that. Some of us go one layer and think we know, and then keep making the same mistakes over and over, or keep seeing ourselves in a limited fashion, or as the trauma imprinted us, right? Because it told us some things, right? Sexual abuse often tells us that we're only good for one thing, so we become very sexualized in our relationship. Or physical abuse can say, you know, I don't deserve to be treated well, right? I deserve what's happening to me, whatever it happens to be. And oftentimes we stop at that layer. So I feel very hopeful when you say we keep discovering more and more, because hopefully we do till we get down to the middle and go, oh, there I am. There I am in all my perfection and wholeness. There I am, you know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen overnight, you know? let me tell you something. No. You made it sound like it was so simple, but it's not. Because, you know, the days turn into weeks, the weeks turn into months, and the 1 month turn into years. I go, what? You know? So you think you got it all together. You think you have it all together. And then all of a sudden, bang, something hits you in the face, okay?
Yeah,
and it blows your brain. You know what I'm saying? And
you know why
then
does
you
does
have
that,
to.
Carol?
Why does it do that? Why?
It hits you in the face and it bangs and explodes because it says, pay attention to me. You know, those whatever
like
explodes
that.
In our face and hits us over the head, it's there to say, look. And we go, oh, no. Anything but that. I don't want that. Anything but that, right? A, B, and C, but not that, right? Because
right?
Awful.
Right? Absolutely, That's awesome. That's right. I agree with you, A lot of times we don't want to see things. You know, we go along an even keel, you know, for a while. We're all right. And then all of a sudden something really nasty happens, whatever it might be. And then you have to learn how to deal with it appropriately, you know, on a level that's not going to bring you down, you know, make you do things that you did before, whatever it might be, go backwards. We don't want to go backwards.
Mm-hmm.
We want to continue to move forward, you know, and this is what we have to learn how to do. We have to be strong enough to realize that this is what happened, this is today, and that happened, and I just got hit with it, and that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you have to accept it and then move on if you can. It might take a day or two. And then you go along your merry way, and then all of a sudden you get another smack in the head. You know, oh, no. You know, where did that come from, you know? You know, and, you know, it's like it's very hard. The healing journey is not easy.
No.
Okay.
That's right. That's right. One of my prayers used to be, please don't make the smack so hard. Please, I promise you, I will keep my eyes open. You don't have to hit me so hard over the head.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of the nature, isn't it? Because, you know, we don't want to see what we don't want to see, you know?
No, we don't. The way I look at it is my mind is so... What's the word? I'm on air. I have to be very nice now. It's so jammed up with things from the past, you know, that happened. And I've gotten past that in the sense where I function. You know, I do what I have to do. But every once in a while, something will come creeping back into my mind, you know. Hey, boom.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like something triggered me. It could be a trigger. And you have to learn with it appropriately, you know, not to, you know, let it take you backwards. Unfortunately, I get calls from people who are stuck. And it's so hard to deal with people who are stuck. Because, and you know this, you have to get them to want to be unstuck. Sometimes they get too comfortable. And then I'll say, but how are you feeling now? How are you feeling now? You called me because you're feeling miserable. Do I have to remind you? You know? You're feeling bad, man. That's why you called me. And then you have to go over all of that, wherever it is, that you know, emotion that they're going through at that time that's making them so miserable. And, it takes time. It takes time. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
Well, it does. And there's always so much fear attached when, especially the stuff from the past comes up, you know, when the triggers happen and the pain happens. And there's always a repetition, you know, kind of that goes on with that. And then there's that fear. It's like standing. I remember the first time that I got up on a diving board, right? And you're standing there and I'm feeling so sassy, you know, going up the stairs and going out and I'm going to jump in. Then I get up there and go, oh my God, what was I thinking? Right. Cause I felt like I was on the top of a, 20 story building or something. It was just a little diving board and everybody's saying, jump, jump. And it was like, oh, I don't think I can do that. Right. And it is taking, it is jumping and knowing that it's okay, it's going to be safe, I'm in the water and so on. But, you know, I mean, the first time I went back off the diving board and crawled back down and was embarrassed and humiliated because I couldn't jump off. And I think that's the way it is for a lot of people when they're stuck in that pain and you're saying, just jump by doing something different or making another decision or altering beliefs, whatever it happens to be, right, or experiencing the pain. And it's like, I think I'm going to go back to the other end of the board and go down the stairs. I don't think I want to do that. Right.
Well, you know, it's what you said. It's the fear factor sets in. Something in you, it makes you stiff. Something makes you, you get frightened. Because, I don't know, maybe something happened in your life, you know, years before that made you feel that way. You were frightened, you were stiff, you were scared to take a new step, you know, to do something. It could come from all different areas. It could be from criticism, you know, from people saying, you can't do it. Go sit down, you can't do it, whatever. Oh, you know, you're not worthy enough. You can't do that. You're not smart enough. You know, all these things. And then you get up there and, oh, boy, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Oh, boy. I can't do it. You know,
exactly. And when you stop and think, some of the decisions that most of us made, if you're being physically abused or sexually abused and you know, emotionally traumatized or abandoned and neglected, all of those different things, most of us knew that at the time. We knew it wasn't okay, right? But most of us felt too frightened or didn't have the resources to do anything about it. We froze, right? Or we distracted, or we minimized it to ourselves, and it'll be better tomorrow, or maybe he won't come around, or whatever, right? Whatever it is we told ourselves, right? We didn't act. And I think that gets pretty embedded, too, about that we are helpless, because at that time, we were in helpless. Right? So that whole helpless phenomenon, I think it's ingrained down in our bone marrow and entwined around our trauma. So if we think about getting out of that, even though it's not currently, you know, happening, or it may be, it's like there's that helpless feeling about, oh, I can't, or nobody will believe me, or I don't know what to do, or I'll think about it tomorrow. Well, it's not that bad, right? We get caught in that again.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And it is so hard. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just like this is interesting in the sense that when I was living in New York, in Staten Island, I had a sense of direction. I did. I had a sense of direction. And I had to take the city bus to school and everything, you know, and come home. And I knew everywhere I was going. Okay. Now, after that horrible incident, where I was one of 14 girls that was kidnapped and raped. The point is, all of a sudden, I started to notice, Sharon, and this has not been fixed yet today, I have started to notice that one by one, I started losing my sense of direction. Mm-hmm. Now, I was able to take the cops, you know, to where it happened. Mm-hmm. I was able to do it, and man, he had me far away because I was the last one, and he was going further away because he didn't want to get caught, of course. So, but I kept, you know, looking here and looking there, and saying, okay, we have to pass this, we have to pass, because I knew I was going to go to cops if I lived, okay, if I made it back home, and I did. He was not a serial killer; he was a serial rapist. That's what he was. But I started to lose my sense of direction. And now when people tell me to go somewhere, I say, well, are you stupid? You want me to go to Connecticut? I'm not going to make it, okay? It's not going to happen, man. You know, because I never got my sense of direction back. It's ridiculous, and it's infuriating.
It's a hole, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes it can keep me from doing things that I want to do. I mean, I have tried to go out and take a ride and say, okay, well, I'll go so-and-so, such a place, whatever. I mean, if it's very close to home, I'm okay, all right. But you go further out, you see, which is what was happening, if you look back, because I did go and get help at one point, I thought, it didn't help. But anyway, he said the further you get away from home, of course, the more frightened you're going to become. And that's exactly what was happening that particular day. I was going further and further away from home, all right? So, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten lost. In fact, I'd be embarrassed to tell you. All right. Mm-hmm. So now that's one thing it did. Yeah. I never got over it.
So what do you think the lesson was in that, Carol? What did that part of you that was being victimized learn at that time to help yourself later on? What did you learn?
It didn't help me later on. I'm still stuck.
Well,
I can't.
No, but what you... But there wasn't there danger for you in being able to report
danger.
Where you were?
Oh, yeah. God, no. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, this guy, I resisted once and he slapped me around.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it was horrible. It was horrifying. And, it was very bad. And so he was like a tier two once he got caught. And he only got 3 years. And that just... makes me so mad.
Is that awful?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Horrific isn't even a big enough word to what happened to you. But, you know, when we go through something like that, we will learn certain things that we think at the time, right? Because it was dangerous for you to know where you were. It was dangerous for you to report. You know, there's part of you, right, that knew that. The only problem is that got stuck someplace, right, in terms
of... Well, I'd like
of,
to understand it.
Safe. To know. Yes, you would. Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you would. Do you feel safe?
Say what? What did you say?
Do you feel safe in the world?
No.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, I carry a blade.
Sense.
Well, I'm so...
Okay.
I have to watch how I speak. Everywhere I go, yes, I have a switchblade. You bet your sweet ass I do have a switchblade. I have switchblades by my bed. A lot of my abuse, because my abuse started when I was six, all right? So when I was 6 years old, it started. In New York, I was eight, so and then my panic started at nine. So, but anyway, I always have weapons, lots of weapons. I have nunchucks. I have other things that go make noises. I don't want to say it on air. I have knives. You know, I've got them all, honey. Oh yes, I do.
Yep.
And
issue is not your map. The issue for you, if I may be so bold, like I don't know, but the issue appears to be that the world is not a safe place. So why
it
would
isn't?
You go that far away from home, right? I mean, it's not about, I think you probably have a good map in there someplace, but why would you use it? Because the world's not a safe place for you. And it hasn't been. I mean, your learning has said to you, it's not a safe place, right? And then, you know, you because you are so committed to the work you do, you know, you hear stories that reinforce that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
I do too, you know? You know, if we forget for a minute, we're reminded because when another world that we live in and that a lot of people don't live in, right, which is that we, you know, we open ourselves to other people's stories and we're reminded that things can happen. You know, things go bump in the night and in the day, you know.
Yes, they do. They go bump all the time, honey. I make sure that I've got artillery on me. That's all I'm saying. You know,
you are loaded
but
for bear.
Well,
you know
what?
Go ahead.
I constantly have mace in my bra all the time. I do not go anywhere without mace in my bra, just in case. Seriously.
I think that would make you look lopsided. I wouldn't put it in my bra.
No. I'll tell you how I get it
in my waistband or something.
Sounds like a bad rock song.
But you see how we're speaking, though. Look at how we're speaking. We're speaking of, staying safe. Staying safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been through. No.
Yeah.
I never feel safe,
and
I don't trust anyone either. Why would I,
So,
but I have a tremendous amount of friends. People love me. They think I'm funny, and I love to perform, and I can get up, and I can do all kinds of presentations. I got over my, the panic attacks.
Mm.
And that started at the city pool in New York. And, in those days, I stayed there for about a year and a half. That's it. We moved back in New Jersey. We went back and forth. So, but the point is, this guy at the city pool, we were allowed to actually take the bus by ourselves. We were 8 years old to the city pool. Can't do that anymore. You shouldn't. Oh, my God. But there was this man that I never saw before in my life, never. And he didn't look like any of my abusers even. I can't even equate it to that, here's an analogy. He has blonde hair and blue eyes, No, because most of them did. But this guy had the most evil, hatred look on his face. I swear to God, his eyes were black and his hair was black. Mm. And he was skinny. Maybe that's why I like guys who are a little bit husky. I figured they can save me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he was staring at me, and I felt myself go into panic mode. And that's when my panic attack started. And it took me 40 years to get over them. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So today, I enjoy myself. I'm able to get up, and I could speak in front of 1,000 people. Anyway, the more faces that are out there, they will become one. It's actually easier to do presentations when there's many, many, many people because you don't zero in on one face or anything. It's just like a blur, a blob, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas at one time, I would have to get drunk before I get up and do, any essays or anything like that. I'd have to have a few belts in there, a vodka or something. I had my own flask. And you know how they go around the room, And I knew my turn was going to be up there, so I just go in the ladies' room and go glug, glug, glug. Oh, yeah, honey, I'm feeling fine now. And I always got an A. Yes, I did. And it got put out.
Woman I know.
Oh, yes. And I had a knife on one side and a blade on one side and my flask on the other. Yes, I did.
Mm.
So, you see, when you go through horrific abuse,
mm-hmm.
And there's so many of us on NASCA, that have, and we don't take yard sticks here. The point is, what does it do to you? It's called trauma, okay? It's trauma. And that trauma is what, helps form us with our, it brings forth all these fear factors, And sometimes you don't even quite understand why you'd be afraid of this or afraid of that. And then all of a sudden I'll get like a flashback. You put a spider in front of me, honey, and I'll shoot it. And then I remember.
I'd help you with that one.
And there you go. Hey, I got bit not too long ago over the summer by a spider on my arm, and it was twice the size of what it should be. I had to go and get antibiotics and everything. But I remember then I was in a closet. I was hiding from someone, okay. And there were bugs in that closet. And today I have bugophobia. I don't know what you call it, but I've got bugophobia. That's my word for it. Mm-hmm. So, anything that can harm me, I will smash one way or another.
Yes. So you have become a warrior. That was your decision that you made, right, as a result of your violations, your traumas, that you're going to be a warrior because you're saying, I've got this image of you like, you know, Wonder Woman with all your equipment.
That's me, honey.
Right?
You have good taste.
You are
that's
a warrior.
Right. Yeah, and she was even good looking, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I am
you.
A warrior. I've been a
yes,
warrior for many years, okay, many
yeah,
years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And many of us have been because, mm-hmm. you know, the homes that we came from, okay, whether it was sexual abuse, whether it was physical abuse. My legs have been switched so many times, I can't even tell you. I don't even know why. My mother hated me, mm-hmm. and that's just what happened, you know. And then, mm-hmm. so this is what happens to kids. This is why you have to be careful how you treat kids. Kids mm-hmm. learn from what happens
yes.
at home, okay?
Yes.
Simple as that. Yeah.
Well, it is. And the thing about kids is we're all kind of attesting to here is when something happens to you when you're young, you just don't walk away from that. You don't shed that off like an outgrown garment, right? That has imprinted you. That has taught you lessons, some of them very good lessons, right? I mean, about being strong and taking care of yourself or setting boundaries. And some of them very distorted, right, that then affects us in negative ways. The rest of our lives. But I think what people need to understand with children is treat them well, because when you don't, they're going to imprint that. They're going to somehow make sense of that. If they're being terrorized and they're hiding in a closet because they've been abused, they're going to be afraid of bugs, right? Because that's they're going to put it over on that. But it's going to yeah. affect them, and it's going to affect them on something you mentioned, Carol, that is so profound, and it's at the heart of everything, which is trust. You know, that trust, mm-hmm. which is the very foundation of everything, gets broken, it gets distorted, and that's really hard to rebuild, to say, how mm-hmm. do we know who to trust? Can we trust? Mm-hmm. Is anybody trustworthy in our life? Do we know how to even yeah. figure that out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And without that, we don't leave our house and we don't have a relationship. Any kind of relationship.
Well, here's the deal. That's good you said that, because when I was out on the streets and I was drinking and popping pills, a lot of us did that. Others were shooting up heroin. I had two friends that died right in front of me, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was very sad. I had to run because the cops were coming, and they should be. I'm not saying anything bad about it. But, you know, the point is I would – now, I'm not going to say that I was the most frisky person out on the street, but I was somewhat promiscuous, you know, and because what is alcohol? See, I was drunk. That's what I was. I mean, more than popping pills. I really liked to drink more, and whereas the others were shooting up, but we all got along famously. We absolutely did. And, you know, you let your guard down. You think you're feeling better. You know, you're feeling good because it's what alcohol does to
yeah.
you first. Until you get sloppy and stupid, okay? So, you know, that I was I would let people close to me, we'll put it that way. And so relationships didn't seem so hard then. And to me, that was a relationship, okay? I was letting someone touch me, okay? So, you know, so then when you take the alcohol away, and if people don't then turn to the pills too much, I have to watch that. You know, you take the pills away too, then what the hell do you have? You got your knife, mm-hmm. you got your hammers, you got your switchblades, you've got everything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? This is what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do. And also the part about being frisky, I think those were your words, being frisky or having somebody, you know, close to you. I mean, I think a lot of us probably came out of situations where we wanted to be close, you know, we wanted to feel close
yeah.
to somebody else. And the only way we
mm-hmm.
knew how to do that was to be, you know, frisky, right? To be sexually close
right.
in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also felt validating to a lot of us too, right? Oh, somebody likes me. Somebody thinks I'm okay. You know, somebody wants
mm-hmm.
me.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a whole nother trip. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this is what happens to children who are abused. And if the situations are bad enough, you know, where you're raped and all this other stuff, I mean, you know, and whether it be at home or outside of the home or both places, which was my case, you know, it does something to you. There's no way that it can't do something to you, okay?
Yeah,
that's right. You know, and it comes out in different forms, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, it's a sad world that we live in. And and then with all this stuff that's going on right now, you know, that we're all seeing, whether it be children or adults, for God's sake, I want to go to the city. I love the city. I love New York. I love going to museums. I love Broadway. Oh, my God. I used to sing there, all kinds of stuff. I loved it. I don't want to go to New York right now. I mean, you know, even I would have to take an arsenal with me, okay? Yeah, I mean, my knife would all of a sudden look little, and you know what I'm saying? And so, I mean, no one knows when they're going to get popped off, for God's sake. You know, you're walking down the street minding your own business, and all of a sudden you're gone, you know. So you have to be more mindful now, and people have to think whether they're abused or not.
Yeah. And one thing about this here, too, it doesn't mean you may come off as physical. We're joking, and we are discussing the fact about we take weapons with us because, you know, we want to be sure that we're physically okay. But another aspect, which I had to learn about myself, was I learned how to lie. And for me, it wasn't lying. For me, because I had to be a perfect child. And if I wasn't perfect, then I had repercussions to pay. And so I learned how to say to me, again, it wasn't a lie. I was telling people what they wanted to hear. And then later on, they would come back to me and go, but was that true? Well, it kind of was, but... And I realized, wow, I was really lying, but I really did not believe I was lying. I was just protecting myself so they didn't come at me and me have to defend myself verbally against what a decision or something I did or, you know, what have you. And that was something I had to learn how to get through. And having to shut that off is a big deal. But again, that is the fear that stems from my childhood and from my rape and my molestation and the abuse. I mean, my levels of abuse go many different, like a very layered cake here. But yeah, that fear also is not only physical, but it is the mental aspect of it that, you know, that's difficult to get over as well.
Well, that's such an interesting example, because it's true. We learn to say, okay, so what do I need to do in order to get through this? You know, in your case, how do I, how can I be the perfect child? Oh, I can lie. So you pick up that, you know. Carol's picking up a switchblade. You're picking up the ability to lie, right? And then what happened to that? Because that probably took care of a lot of issues for you. When you were, right? I mean, so then what did you do with that
alcohol
later on? Did you bring that into your adult life, the ability to lie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I brought it into my adult life. I brought it into my work life. Not so much, but, you know, you tell the boss what they want to hear, and then you do what you need to do anyhow, and everybody's happy, you know? But
yeah.
But it did cause problems as well, you know. And I'm not saying I made these big, huge, elaborate lies, but I'm saying, you know, little things just to get me through.
Exactly.
But for me, it was just to get me through. But to the person that it's directed to, it hurt them because they're like, why didn't you just tell me? Why didn't you just tell me the truth instead of this type of engagement?
But see, they were asking you to trust them.
Right.
Which is absolutely what you're talking about, too. I mean, like, trust isn't, you know, usually part of our repertoire as we go into adulthood from being traumatized, right?
Yeah.
So what you developed was a really good ability to be able to read people and know what they wanted to hear and be able to just move something over a little bit. Right?
Yeah.
To color it a little bit. And, yeah, exactly. And then the opposite of that would be just to trust that you could say that, trust you could survive the consequences, trust they could survive it, but trust, are you kidding me? That would be a giant step, I would guess, for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is a giant step. And that's hard, you know, having to explain to people why you don't trust people. I don't need to disclose it every single time, but at the same point, I have to have that inner discussion with myself going, okay.
Yeah.
That is a bad problem. We started talking about that the other night. It was last Tuesday that I was on. I run Tuesdays and Fridays and sometimes on Thursdays. But, yeah, the point is this. We didn't get really into the trust issue because something happened on the show. But anyway, the point is this, the trust. I can see a guy,
yes,
and I'm hot for the guy, okay? And I want to have a relationship with the guy, but I don't trust him.
Yeah.
He's just probably going to be another person that's going to disappoint me, was going to hurt me, and make me want to cry, and I can't really cry. I can cry over my children. My daughter-in-law took a nice picture of me bawling. Thank you. And over my son, you know, brother. Deborah, I think you saw it. But, you know, I mean, my face is all scrunched up. I haven't cried in years. But he has such, you know, major health problems right now.
Yes.
And I'm nervous. So, but, you know, the point is this, you know, it's to get close to a guy. You know, I can.
Yes.
I have lots of gal friends. You know, gal friends. I have no problem. Look, I'm talking to you two just fine. You know, okay, we're like friends. Here we are. But with guys, you know, I can talk to them. Don't get me wrong. But then when they want to get nice and close, and even if I feel hot for someone, I don't know if it's a good idea because one thing leads to another, to another, to another. Now, what are they gonna do? Dump me?
Is that what you expect?
Yeah. That's what I
expect.
And
that's
I
that
think,
expectation that gets so, you know, so ingrained also, right? Expecting the worst to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, expecting abandonment. Because if you're abandoned by somebody in your family who is supposed to love you, care for you, be there no matter what, right? And they abandon you. I mean, what's to say this guy that I'm dating? Right, is not going to abandon me. I mean, that expectation gets really,
Mm-hmm. And that affects a lot of decisions that you make in getting in with in a relationship. You go into a relationship going, hey, he's kind of hot, but I really don't expect this to last. So it's so much easier to get in a relationship like that than it is to get into an actually fully committed relationship where you know that you do want it to last. So you make the wrong decision, not consciously, but subconsciously, you're making that decision because you don't have to really protect yourself at that level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. It's not as risky, is it, to be physically close or keep it on a certain level than it is to be really intimate with somebody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which means, obviously, trusting them, you know, trusting the relationship, trusting that they're going to treat you well, trusting they're not going to run out on you, right?
Yep.
You hit it on the head because I was abandoned so many times by family members, you know, mother, father, you know, what you're supposed to have, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And dumped here, dumped there.
Here, dumped there,
dumped everywhere. Yeah, you know.
That should be our new theme song.
You know, hey, you know, I mean, that's not a cool thing, you know. So then you it's very hard because these are the people that are supposed to nurture you. They're supposed to love you. They're supposed to guide you. They're supposed to, you know, do all the things that a parent is supposed to do. And yes, set boundaries. I didn't have any boundaries. I ran wild. I was like a wild Indian. I was like a wild Indian. And sometimes I had a hell of a good time. I did. I really did.
Yeah.
You know, I did. I had fun. I did. And then I got in with people that were really screwed up more than me, maybe, you know, and wow, the things they did, I had to, you know, I had to get away from them. I had to drop them because even I knew that what they were doing was just too bad and I wasn't going to be a part of that. Okay, that seemed
right.
So I had maybe my own boundaries. There were things that that I wouldn't go that far, you know. But it's very hard for people, you know, to grow themselves up.
Yeah.
And we do make a lot of mistakes along the way. We just simply do. Yeah.
Well, what do we know, you know? I mean, things have been so distorted in terms of our worlds, right? Our expectations were blown, you know, when you were talking about things earlier about hitting you over the head. I mean, think about when a child is mistreated and mistreated in their own home, mistreated by somebody that they really come to trust and believe in, I mean, talk about an explosion. You know, how do you put those pieces together, right? I mean, how do you come to grips with that? And so that has to absolutely be worked through. And I think all of us have had to understand that it wasn't about, even the relationship is a statement about who that person was. At the time, right? And it does not mean that we were not worthy of certainly being treated lovingly and attentively and with kindness and with respect, because it's a statement about that person. But boy, when you're young and you don't know that, and then to reprogram yourself, which is what we have to do, don't we? That's why programs like this are so important, support groups are so important, therapy is so important, so that there is a reality that is held out to say, wait a minute, this is not a story about your worthiness. This is not a story, you know, about who you are as a human being. This is a story about somebody who was really screwed up and really hurt you and traumatized you. Now you've got to find your way back and let me help you, you know. And it's tough. It's tough. I mean, it's tough to even talk about what happened, right? I mean, when you were talking earlier, Carol, about, you know, the resources available, and I mean, it's so wonderful, isn't it, in this day and age that any of us can tune in and we can hear people talk about the stuff that we would have never dared, at least I certainly would have never dared to have talked about, you know?
Yeah, they feel comfortable enough, if the group is right. Okay.
Yeah.
They feel comfortable enough to open up and to, you know, to them, it's like exposing. They're taking that step to let people get closer to them and to understand them and vice versa. You know? And that's growth right there. Yeah, you need that. You need that.
When I used to do my support groups, and I remember the first day, because it was in a series, and the first day I would be, and it was a small group. I mean, we would do 8 to 10 people and me for all day, and then we'd do seven of those. But I would sit there, and I would look at the people there, and I have to tell you, it was like a heart explosion to think that for so many people that were sitting there in front of me, they had never even told anybody that they had been abused. And by their very fact that they signed up and they were there, they are declaring that maybe for the first time. And maybe they were, you know, 22, maybe they were 46, maybe they were 63, right? But it was the first time. I mean, what a moment that is for all of us to come forth and reveal, you know, what had happened to us and not feel the shame that is so wrapped up that makes us feel like there's something wrong with me because and I'm damaged and I'm whatever our story is because this happened to me, to say, you know what, this is what somebody did to me. This is my
and
wound,
that's right,
you know.
That is so true. Do you have a couch? Do you have a couch in your office?
I do. I do have a couch.
I think we should go and visit her. I'll take a turn. You can take a turn.
You know,
and
we're going to find
her
right now.
There you go. Hey, there you
you're
go.
You're getting an image of it. Yeah. But I mean, it is such a moment. And I'm sure when people even call in to a show like this or show up for a support group, I mean, it is such a moment. You know, I had somebody, we have a little July 4th gathering because our little city parade happens to go down, it goes through an old neighborhood. We're in the oldest neighborhood in San Jose, and it goes down the street. So we always have a little gathering at 4th of July. And so we had the person who was our realtor and his wife come, and we have an older house. I mean, for California, it's older, not for East Coast, but for here, it's older. It's 1930s house. So she wanted to see the house, and I said, oh, absolutely, let me give you a tour. And so we were going upstairs, and she came into my den, and my book was sitting, you know, up in the desk. It was open. I'd been doing something. And so she came over, and she kind of looked, and she said, Healing Step, what's that about? And I told her, and she started to cry. Aww, and she said, that happened to me, and I've never told anybody. And by the way, she was probably around maybe early 40s. She was getting married to this realtor. In the next few months, I said, have you shared it with him? Oh, no. No, I haven't told anybody. But, oh, my God. You know? Oh, so you never know when that moment, and of course, you know what I advised her probably, but you never know when that moment is going to happen, right, for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was just shocked. Remember when she was shocked that she just opened up like that and she told somebody. And then she was embarrassed, and then she was trying to manage her feelings. And, you know, and I recommended, I said, I think this is your time. I don't, you know, I very strongly believe in synchronicities. And I said, you noticed that you were the only one that wanted the house to come upstairs, look at the house, because people have been here before, and it's not, you know, and you wanted to come, and my book was just sitting there, right? I mean, at that moment, this is your time. And so if you don't trust, again, the word trust, that you can deal with it, this says to me you can, because everything was aligned to support you to say it's time. And I think it's very important that you do that before you get married, you know?
Yeah,
because your husband
right there,
needs
bingo.
Because
yeah.
we all know those issues come up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, it's
eventually,
interesting because I have not married before. I mean, I think she was around 42. And she said, because I never wanted to be that close to somebody. And I said, have you ever wondered why that is? You know? And she said, well, no, I just thought I'm busy with my career. And I said, okay. I said, I think it's very important because it sounds like you're ready to be close to somebody. And it's very hard to be close to somebody when you have a part of you that you're keeping walled off.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and you know, let me tell you something. Now, with my first husband, I didn't know that he was sexually abused. He never told me that. I remember telling Deborah, I think it was a couple weeks ago, that, you know, I found out through the grapevine after I divorced him that he had been sexually abused at the age of 11. And it was kept hush-hush. He never got help and all this other stuff. Well, maybe this is why he was so awful in the marriage, you know, because, you know, he had so many issues of his own. And, boy, I liked the way he looked, too. You know, he's a good-looking guy. He had a Harley. He had a Cadillac. I had it all, man. He took me to Saudi
in
New York.
There?
Oh, boy. No, nothing.
Yeah.
When you're that age, nothing, honey. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you're still right.
Oh, jeez. We were so young. I got married at 19. So, and in those days, though, Sharon, that's what they did. A lot of times the girls got married right after, say, even high school. A lot of them did.
Oh, I did that. I got married in college, and I married a football player, what else can I say, with a very the most normal family you have ever seen. I went to his house for a Sunday dinner. And his mother greeted me at the door wearing a darling dress, little heels, had an apron. She had a roast in the oven, and she was frosting a cake. They had a Cocker Spaniel. He had a sister 2 years younger than himself. The husband wore a cardigan sweater, and I walked into that house, and I said, oh, my God, I've walked into, you know, Leave It to Beaver or something. I fell in love with this family.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I got my normal family. Actually, I came to absolutely adore and love them, but I mean, that was it. I mean, who cares what he was like? This was wonderful, you know?
That is so, you just gave me chills because when I walked into Paul, that was his name, he died years ago, bad treatment of self, okay? But anyway, you walked into his house and of course there was a roast in the oven, okay? And then his older sister was there and she had her children, their friend, ring around the rosy. And dad was over reading the newspaper. In those days there were newspapers, okay? And everything was just so perfect and so calm and so cozy. And you felt, leave it to Beaver. Yeah. This is the way it's supposed to be, okay?
Yeah.
They were all monsters. All of them. She had a Ouija board and she used it. I ended up using it. I wanted to know where Paul was going. It was during the Vietnam time, okay? And I wanted to know if he was going to Vietnam or not. He was going to get drafted. Nothing I could do about it. And, you know, and the father, oh, this is crazy. The father was in the, I'm not going to say it on air now because of confidentiality, but the father was, in the same place that I worked, psychiatric hospital.
Mm.
I found his records. Holy Christopher.
Mm.
I wasn't looking for one. I didn't know he was there, all right? I was looking for someone, and his name popped up. I go, what? So there was the father. The mother was into Ouija boards and all this other stuff, and especially the other stuff. And there was my husband, and the sister was a rat. I mean, what is this? I thought it was leave it a beaver, you see? We can't judge people right either, okay?
Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, and
my goodness.
You know, I have that. I married my ex-husband when I was 22. And we worked together, and I mean, we actually worked together when we got together. And as we grew, of course, you have your starter apartment, then you get your starter home, and then we kept expanding. And the last house we got, I was like, I don't want it. And he's like, but look how beautiful it is, and look what we can do. And we stayed there for like 10 years, but it felt like I was in a prison. Big, beautiful house, but it was not a big, beautiful house. I had nice cars. I had a boat. The kids had cars. I mean, it was a leave it to Beaver from the outside. But inside, I was absolutely miserable because, you know, I just had started coming out with my story. I just had barely told my husband when I was 34. And wow, how did it, when I decided I wanted to start speaking and starting to want to talk about it, I kind of imploded with that, the panic attacks and not wanting to go outside and not wanting to be seen, drinking like a fish. I was just miserable. Mm-hmm. And then when I got out of that, of course, I carried on my alcoholism for a bit, but I was happy to get out of that. And the relief that everybody's like, but you were married for 23 years. I don't care. I was better to be out of that situation than feel like I was being imploded in my leave it to Beaver lifestyle.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a good point there, Deborah, because, you know, many times, in fact, I saw something today just similar to that. Many times people will stay in a relationship because they do have kids, and maybe the woman can't, you know, support the children, and so she stays and stays and stays and stays and stays, and this is very damaging to children, because what happens is they see what's going on between the mommy and daddy, and it's not pleasant, and it can actually be so volatile where people end up dead, you know, I mean, you go from point A to point B, and you have to be really, really careful. And this really, you know, screws around with the kids' brains. And unfortunately, all right, now today, of course, we have shelters, which is what I was talking about today before the show. Well, we have shelters, and the shelters today are much different than what they were years ago, okay? Today they're better equipped. They have more counselors. They offer more services, as long as they have the funding, right? You know, but they do the best with what they have, and you know, it's a much better deal today to go to a shelter. When I wanted to go to a shelter at one time with my children, I thought to myself, I don't know what the shelter is going to be like, because I knew people that were going to shelters and they were getting bounced around. They were only allowed to stay like for a week, say, at one shelter, and then they take them to another shelter, and then to another shelter, and to another. Well, that's not good for the kids either, okay?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, craziness. You have garbage bags filled with your stuff. I didn't even have suitcases, right? So, no. But today, there is more help out there today. Sharon, you know, you agree with that, I'm sure, you know, that
absolutely.
There is more help.
Yeah. There's more help, and we know more. You know, we know more, and we know a lot of the steps that need to be taken that I think, I mean, I can remember going and working at a shelter early on in my days when we're talking about, this must have been around 1980, 1981, right in that time, and it was exactly as you're describing it. I mean, the way of keeping people safe was to move them around. And they were so understaffed, and the situation was not helpful. It was, I mean, it was helpful in that it provided that immediate relief, that emergency kind of relief. But in terms of anything that could, you know, provide some hope, it's after the emergency, it was sadly lacking. So I agree. I think the situation is much better. And I think people are talking about it more. Right.
Yes.
So I think and I think that we have, you know, internet connections and so on, so women can find resources and they can talk to other people. Whereas before, you had to actually physically go someplace to talk to someone, and oftentimes, you know, that could be very dangerous for you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Look at the underground they have. They have underground.
Yes.
And there's reasons for that. Because, you know, the spouse, whether it be male or female, but usually it's male. I mean, the stats show that there's a lot more female abusers than we think about, whether it be, you know, towards children or whether it be towards in the marriage. And but, of course, there are more men. But the point is they would find, or they'd have an idea as to where the wife was and the children. Okay.
And
at times there were problems, many problems. So then they, you know, in a very volatile situation, they use the underground, as they call it. They call it the underground.
Exactly.
You know?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
They've gotten a lot smarter, a lot wiser, and I think because more people are speaking up, I think I know a lot of us in the professional community are learning so much more. We're learning a lot more about what's really needed, right? It's not just learning, you know, from education and then trying to apply it to a situation, because we don't have time to learn it from, I mean, the experts in violence and domestic violence are people who have been violated, right? I mean, those are the experts. And I think that we've learned a tremendous amount and are doing a much, much better job of keeping people safe and providing places for them to go and resources and so on. Thank God. I mean, what year is it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because
what I tell people
today, 1980 here in California is pretty progressive in ways of helping. You know, I helped people have been violated and so on with assistance. It was pretty rocky back then. You know, we just didn't have that much. So it's really changed. Thank heavens, right? And that's because people are coming forth. That's because people are speaking up, too, and teaching all of us what we need to know. I mean,
in the
80s,
they didn't have it anywhere. You know, I mean,
some
areas were better, you know, than other areas. You know, but on the other hand, you know, that's something that's in the last, say, 20 years, I don't know, has gotten a lot better.
Yes.
And thank God that it has, because there's so many women, there's women listening right now, okay, probably, that are in domestic violence situations. And then you have to worry about, you know, the emotional stability of the woman. So often, you know, they won't leave. They make excuses.
Yeah.
I love him. I don't want to go.
He'll change.
Yeah.
I know he will.
Oh, yeah.
I know it'll be better.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then too, though, you know, if they have children, young children.
Yeah.
Now, in my case, I wanted my children to have their biological father. Okay?
Yes.
And because I came from a mother who hated me, and it turned out my father that I had always called father was not my biological father. That's why it was so easy for him just to take off. finally. Mm. He didn't care. And you know, it was very, very weird. So I didn't want my kids not to have a mommy and a daddy. I just didn't.
Yes.
I wanted it to straighten out. I wanted it to get better. Mm-hmm. better. And
it's so understandable. And that goes back to some of the expectations we have, too, of what we didn't have, we want our kids to have, which in mm-hmm. some cases, you know, cannot serve them as well as it needs to. But, I mean, very understandable. And then I think one of the other things that has changed is women going into the workforce and being able to have money, because I think that whole financial thing, and I remember back in the, like I said, about 1980 when I was doing some work with the Domestic Violence Center, that was one of the biggest reasons that women didn't go out, because a lot of the women had never worked, or if she did work, had made just a minimum amount of money, and what was she going to do? Because she wants her children to be safe, have a roof over their heads, and have food on the table.
Sure.
And it would be provided there. And so how could she walk away from that and let her children, you know, be in a situation that would be tough? And what situation would that be? Would it be on the street, or would it be in a situation that would be detrimental to them, even more detrimental?
Right.
So it was tough. So
it was very, very rough.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
very
yeah.
rough.
Well, you went through
that, remember,
so you know.
I remember, working. I worked in a lot of different jobs because I moved a lot, always trying to make more money. And probation mm-hmm. had the wrong address for my husband, my first husband, the kid's father. They thought he was over in Europe. He was 3 miles down the street. Okay?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I was so
yeah.
mad. And the reason why they gave me access to his, whereabouts and so forth, I mean, his name, with the computers, they would just come out. It was because I was part of the Robert Lifers program, Scared Straight. I had to get something, I had to start somewhere. Because before that,
right.
I was working in a dime store, when a dime store was still there, okay?
Mm.
Eating malted balls, getting yelled at, because I'm eating a malted ball, you know. And so they moved me to Staples. I wasn't going to eat the Staples, all right? So, but anyway, the point is, I started out with these Robert Lifers program, Scared Straight, which was volunteer. I did it for 3 years. I had to have something to put on a resume, all right? And I learned an awful lot with the Railway Lifers program. But they screwed up with my husband, okay? And and because I had been a part of the program, I got access, that's how. And I said, for God's sake, you have his middle name wrong. He said, what?
Mm.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes. So this guy, who they thought was my husband, was over in Europe. And when I gave him the right name, they found out sooner or later that he was 3 miles down the street from there. Holy crap. And he was
another
working,
betrayal.
So they started
another
to garnish
betrayal.
His wages. It was another betrayal.
Another betrayal.
They didn't mean to, though, okay? I didn't hold it against them. But at that point, social services didn't pay well. You know this. They did not pay that well in the beginning. And when you have children you have to take care of, and I had gotten an apartment, you have rent to take care of, and everything that goes along with it. They allowed for me to have dental and and food stamps. That was it, dental and food stamps, which was very helpful. But I was embarrassed. Me, who came from a wealthy family, all right? A wealthy family. Who didn't care?
Yeah.
So we would flip a coin. My kids were a little bit older, and we'd flip a coin because we were all embarrassed about using the food stamps. So finally I said, oh, geez. There were coupon books at that time. So finally I said, okay, look, I have panic attacks. We don't even know what panic attacks are. Now, I don't know what they are either, but I have them. I said, you take this part of the list, you take that part of the list, and I gave them each, coupons. Go. And they're old enough, I didn't have to worry about them. So they went in, and boy, did they do a quick shopping, and they came out, and they were mad. And I didn't blame them. I was mad, too,
Yeah.
3 miles down
the
street. Yeah. So they garnished his wages then. Then I was okay. Mm. But it took a while, you know, for
yeah.
social services to pay higher, you know, so you could,
yeah.
you know, leave, you know, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I can understand why the world has not been a safe place because the people that you invested in, right, betrayed
yeah.
you,
yes.
as well as, mm-hmm. you know, all the other stuff. You know, I mean, that's so hard, isn't mm-hmm. it? I mean, not only coming from, you know, having it happen within a family of origin, but also when we invest ourselves into a relationship and then they betray us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa, it
yeah.
must, what I thought must be true, right? The world's not a safe place. You can't trust anybody, even the
yeah.
father of your children. It's
yeah.
That's rough. I mean, you have a,
yeah.
that's a lot of snarls to try to undo and smooth out.
Yeah. Well, I still have issues. You know, I'm always going to have some issues. You know, they're not terrible
yeah.
issues. They're more of an inward type issue that I have to deal with that doesn't affect other people, except if they ask me to go somewhere. You know, I'll get in the car.
Right.
I like to drive, and I drive probably too fast. I like fast things, like bikes and everything else.
Yeah.
But, will I get there? I don't know. You know. Oh, my God. If it's more than 20 miles away, I may not, okay? You know, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you know, but that's so little compared to what, you know, you know, some people, you know, are still walking around with today, and they don't know,
right.
they don't know how to let loose, you know, to get rid of, to face, to change, because they are just so into self and confused
mm-hmm.
and scared.
And it, yeah.
yeah,
and it feels so scary to jump off that diving board into another world. And you don't know what
yes.
that's going to be like once you take that
right.
step, right? Because we all,
mm-hmm.
and we all know that there's some legitimacy to that because, you know, I would guess it's probably true for both of you. It certainly was true for me when I had stepped, well, I didn't step in. I feel like I was pushed into, you know, all my unhealed stuff. And it wasn't a soft
yes.
landing, you know. It was pretty rocky
yeah.
and pretty rough and pretty miserable and all of that. So there's a legitimate sense about, oh, this is not going to be good. This could be scary. But the truth is, as you go through all of that, however it is, you know, for you, because it's so individual, it's a thumbprint, right, because it's individual for all of us. But then you do come out the other side, and then you can talk about it and know that there's still work to be done, and you can laugh about it like we're doing. You know, we can laugh at the commonality. We can laugh at, oh, God, yeah, I know, and I'm still learning about that one, but I'm only going to go 20 miles from home. But, you know, it's all right. It's
yeah.
all right, you know.
And anytime you're sweating bullets and nervous the whole time.
Exactly.
Well, you know, at one time, with the loss of direction, okay, thing. The psychiatrist, I had friends that were psychiatrists, and they had their own psychiatrist, some of them. Okay, so I was seeing a psychiatrist who was seeing a psychiatrist. I don't care. What do I care? So anyway, she said, you know, the way to get over, you know, that thing that you have with the, you know, going places is to do it more. So I tried doing it more, and guess what? I got lost more. So I said, screw that. Hey, it didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't work. You know, it didn't work.
And maybe it's okay. You know, maybe it's okay to say, you know, I have a safe place that I'm familiar with. I feel comfortable there. My world's a little bit smaller maybe than it could be. But you know what? It's okay. Given where I've come from, it's not that bad. It's okay.
Yeah.
Somebody else
That's
can
true.
Drive. You know,
that's
yeah.
true.
Well,
that's
even
true.
For me, I love camping. But as we're talking mm-hmm. about going to weird places, I love camping. And when somebody
mm-hmm.
takes me camping, of course they're driving because I'm afraid I will get lost. And if I get lost, I will panic. So
mm-hmm.
they'll drive me. I'll go with friends. I'll go with whatever. But the whole time, I'm panicking. Get there, and I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm there for a day, and I know I have to leave the next day, so I start panicking. Because I'm like, okay, now we got to go back. Okay. So
yeah. See, that takes away from the joy, you know. But I can
yeah,
identify with that. Because I mean, I like going camping, too, as long as I have all my artillery with me, you know what I'm saying? There might be bears, there might be coyotes and all this other stuff, you know. So, you know, and where I live now, that's exactly what I've got, is bears. I there was one on my deck last night. They come, aren't they supposed to go hibernate soon or something? I'm a city girl. I don't know too much about the country. Now, don't they hibernate soon?
You had a bear?
Oh, we all, listen, some of the people around here, they're so stupid.
they put
food out. I'm telling you, they put food out for the bears.
Yes. Yeah. I remember we were camping in Yosemite, and they had signs up about do not feed the bears, do not, right? I mean, it was very obvious, and we were way up in kind of a backcountry part of it. And all of a sudden, I'm at the one against the side of the tent, and all of a sudden I'm feeling this pushing. The bears came down because these novice campers, when they said about not leaving food out, they decided to put it in boxes underneath their table so that the bears wouldn't see it. Right?
Oh my God.
In boxes.
That's not
under
how it works.
The picnic table.
They're going to smell it, for God's sake. That's stupid.
Well, of course. It was like, oh, my God. So the bears all came out. Thank God they just came out. They raided that. They went through all that food, and they went back again. But, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm afraid of those critters. Let me tell you something. They're not friendly, okay? Every once in a while, we hear of a kid at a campground who gets taken away. He's in his, you know, the thing that they roll up in and go to sleep in, and all of a sudden, they're taken. So, I would have my stuff with me, you know, because, you know, you have to take care of yourself. You have to be safe. You have to be safe. You have to. But, you know, I put on my phone.
Not in a puffer coat. Oh, I'm sorry. Carol's not in a puffer coat.
Oops.
You go.
A puffer coat? Oh, okay.
Carol's not one of those big puffer coats. She's just got a lot of equipment on her body.
That's right, honey. You bet. I want to get to it. If I have to get to it fast, I don't want it in my way. No. But, you know, we have neighborhood watch on our cell phones around here. And so we were talking about the bears, because the bears do roam around here quite a bit, okay? Mm. So, yeah, I don't like that. So, I made the mistake of putting the only good bear is a bear rug. Okay. In other words, a dead bear, all right? I like bear rugs. They're pretty. I used to have them. They were great. They were wonderful. And they unfortunately got ruined in a flood. I was with Marty, second marriage, and he had a lot of bear rugs that he was selling, and they got ruined. So but by my putting that on there, those doofballs around here, the ones that make their own water, as they call it, you know, they got mad at me. Because, you see, they like the bears, and they like to put food out for them. Mm. And they take videos of them. Mm. They do. They take videos of them. And they talk to them. Go away, boy. Go on now. Yeah, you go away. Are you stupid? I don't know.
Yes.
No. You know,
that's the opposite kind of trust issues, isn't it? It's like not knowing who you can trust.
Yeah.
Bears are wild animals.
They're not.
In Wyoming, he has a lot of bear stories. But he grew up in Wyoming. He said one time that he was at Yellowstone, and there was a couple, and the bears used to come right up against the road, right, because people would feed them, which is also, as you said, a stupid thing to do. But they people get out of their cars and they go take pictures of the bear. So this one woman was going to take a picture of her husband with this bear, and he was extending his arm to feed the bear. And she said, wait a minute, I haven't got this focused right. So he pulled back his arm with the food in it in front of the bear. Yeah.
Oh, no.
He did not live to finish that story. That's right, because the bear just went out and swiped him and beheaded him. It's a true story.
Oh, my
word. My God.
I know. I mean, but the stupidity of somebody saying, oh, cute bear, let's go out and give him a treat and hand it to him and then take it away from him, right? Because they
are wild animals. Oh, that is so stupid. Yeah.
It's so stupid. I mean, it's a sad story, obviously. It's a horrific story. But it's just the, the stupidity of people, what you're talking about putting food out and talking to the bears like they're the family dog.
Like they're the family pet.
We have to know who to trust.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have to know who to trust and who not to trust. Yeah.
Yeah. And the coyotes, they're not good to have around either because that's just the way it is. And every once in a while, I'll look at my cat and I'll say, no, you can't go outside because, ow! And, I mean, I've got it down to a T, man. And you know, then she walks away from the door. Oh, my God. But listen, we only have a couple of minutes left here. Please, before we hang up here, tell us about your workbook because people need that. Yes.
Okay. So Healing Steps is based on the workshops that I was talking about earlier. And basically it is a workbook and it is a book packed full of also information. It's packed full of truth. It's got a lot of stories for the women have been so generous to share with me. As I was writing the book, which is based on, we had seven workshops. These are seven steps to take in terms of the healing journey, and it's all laid out. It talks about why it's important to look at it. Like the first one is called Breaking the Silence, why it's important to share the secret of your, in this case, it's sexual abuse, your sexual abuse with somebody else, because as long as you, if you have not done that, it keeps you in a relationship with the perpetrator. And I am guessing that for most people with sexual abuse, they do not want to be, or we do not want to be in a relationship with our perpetrator. So it talks about the importance of why you should take each step, how to do it, exercises, information about it, women's stories about it. And so it's the kind of thing that you can pick up. You can, if you happen to be going through relationship issues, that happens to be my favorite chapter in the book for some reason, but you're going through some struggles with relationships. Mm-hmm. You can open it up to that chapter. You don't have to go through the big first and go all the way through. It's the kind of book you can open up, as you said, Carol, at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're feeling depressed and saying, what is wrong with me? What's going on? I feel possessed by something. Open the book and read about open it at random. You know, I said I was a big believer in synchronicities, and that there's going to be something there that will give you hopefully some support, but will keep you company so you know you're not alone. Because for all of us, that's the most important thing, is to know are not alone. And if nothing else, if you never do another exercise, if you just look through the book, you're going to know you are not alone. You know, that there are other people who have walked through the same journey. Maybe a little different, but it's the same journey you're walking through. And that's, I think that gives strength to all of us. So it's called Healing Steps.
Well, that's wonderful.
Available on
Amazon.
Yes, it
is. That's wonderful. Well, listen, we had a wonderful show, and we always do. And you know, I have Deborah, and Deborah, thank you so much for being on, and Sharon, I love you to death, and you know, you're so good, and so anyway, we're at the end of the show, and I just want people to know that we're having, I believe Bill's going to be on tomorrow. He's going to be the guest. Yeah, so I believe so. I'm not sure 100%, but I think he might be. We were talking about it earlier. So anyway, he'll be on. And I said, if you ever need somebody, go always put me on. So I don't even remember the last time I told my story. But you know what? I tell my story every time I talk because I tell you this, I tell you that, I tell you that. You put it all together, and you got 314 pages. That's the way it goes, you know what I'm saying? But that's okay because I use it to show things and to teach things and all this other stuff. And we can all do that because we have a lot to tell people.
Yeah.
We do.
And
absolutely.
May I say that this is what trust looks like. Tonight's show is what trust looks like. It's when people come together and tell their truth and we listen and we hear and we show up. And that's what trust is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to thank you so much. I just got the 90-second cue in my ear, so in a second I'll get the 60 seconds. So I'm going to have to say goodnight to you. I'm so glad you were here, Sharon. And I'll see you next month, okay, honey? Thank you so much. It was a very good show. Thank you, Deborah. And good
no
night,
problem.
Everybody. Okay, we'll
thank
talk
you.
Later. Okay, honey. Bye-bye now.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was